Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's October 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Ostrom. Real quick, I'm the CEO and founder of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. And we do this by using our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle-tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with Terraform, just head over to cloudposse.com/meet, answer a few quick questions, and you'll book a meeting with me directly. I'll show you what modern infrastructure looks like. So, how can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, our format is informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. This is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. You can join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's office hours valuable, please share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse and you'll find the video there. We'll be posting this recording in a couple of hours. So with that said, let's see what's on the agenda for news and announcements. Well, first, oh yeah, and there's one more thing on here I forgot to add, but yeah, let's see here. Oops. All right, so first thing is a small little feature. This was contributed by Michael, so thank you for that. It's a cool little addition to Atmos if you're using Atmos. So Atmos is this concept of components. Your infrastructure is made up of components. You'll have like a VPC, an EKS cluster, a database, a load balancer. All those different pieces are your components. And rather than have to track down the documentation for each one of those, we added a shortcut in Atmos that you can just run Atmos docs and the name of your local component, and it'll give you the documentation for that component. Right now, it's not yet interactive. We're going to make it interactive shortly, but that'll allow you to also search and scroll through it more conveniently. So check that out. We just released that in a recent version of Atmos. Atmos 1.9.8 is where we released that. Also, I have to say just how much it has made my life better. We have this simple GitHub Action workflow that will comment on a pull request when that pull request actually makes its way into a release. So when you're looking at any pull request, you know when that went out. Simple enough to do other ways, but this is much faster. Next announcement is something that I came across when stalking Charm bracelets, repositories, and then actually going a little bit further and stalking who the developers are because they do a lot of cool stuff. And cool, you know, one interesting thing about great developers is that they're really creative and they have their own cool projects. So that's why I was going through and looking at them. Now, this is just a small little thing, not rocket science. Anyways, it's something I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I want to create these nice little trees. And what I end up doing is just mkdir and creating a folder structure in my on my file system and then running the tree command because that's faster than having to edit the little UTF-8 characters and creating this tree view. Well, here's a simple thing I never thought that I would like or want to have, but you can just create your list in Markdown using standard lists and nested lists. Pipe it through this and you get a nice little tree structure. If you're writing Markdown documentation, this is like just another little tool to have in your quiver or another arrow in your quiver. All right, next announcement is this was something I think I saw, was it via Hacker News? It shows the real-time latencies between any two data centers or any two regions, rather, in AWS. If you're operating multi-region infrastructure, That could be interesting. It's interesting to see, the difference between just Northeast one here. Well, this is Asia Pacific, so it's quite a distance, but yeah. And that's sponsored by CloudPing there. Next. One of the things when we kick off any new project, we try and dust off our design decisions. If one thing's for certain, the tools of our trade are changing constantly, continuous learning, right, with every project. And as new things become available, what made sense as recommendations or decisions in the past might no longer be the same. So if any of you are using EKS, you might have had to decide what to do about persistent storage. So in Kubernetes, storage is abstracted. You have the concept of a storage class, and you can have multiple storage classes deployed. So we used to always recommend a Cloud Posse by default to deploy EFS as your default storage class. Well, after having done that now for a number of years, I think we have a different perspective on it. I think it's still a great storage class, but it's not worth it for everyone. If you don't care about your pods recovering and having access to the same file system, then why add EFS into the mix? It's just costly and not adding much value. So, EFS also has undergone a lot of performance improvements as well. It keeps getting faster, but you have to pay to play. So that's the other reason why we stuck to EFS, arguing that it is still a relatively performant file system. But we've had a little bit of a change of heart and understand that there is time and place for when you might want to use EBS volumes. And EBS is frankly just easier. It's built in natively to EKS using a CSI driver. You can also do backups with actual EBS-backed volumes. Backups with EFS-backed volumes is basically non-existent. Yes, you could orchestrate something convoluted with AWS backups, but good luck restoring that in any timely manner. Other things is, if you just rely on disks for scratch space, use empty dir and, be done with it. So we've updated our recommendation and when to use which one here. Check it out if that sounds interesting. And this is just one aspect of our reference architecture at Cloud Posse. If you haven't checked out our docs, go to docs.cloudposse.com, and we break down our approach to infrastructure step by step, layer by layer, and incorporate a number of design decisions that you should be aware of when considering implementing this for your organization, whether or not you use our reference architecture. Our reference architecture just makes some of that stuff easier. All right. Any questions on EFS or design decisions? Or sorry, on default storage classes for EKS or other considerations that maybe we should add here?
There are also a few additional requirements for EFS. So, you got to outfit a bunch of infrastructure that's not like on a node that's not just like, yeah, give me another volume. And then your charts or your Kubernetes objects also need to be aware of that. And some one more thing to break. I'm literally just merged the PR to rip EFS out after 2 years. Because that temp volume should be an EBS volume.
Interesting, interesting. So you've come to some of the same conclusions, or probably you probably went with EFS because we suggested it to you back then,
Yeah,
and now you've had a change of heart.
no, I blame you for a lot of stuff, Eric.
Hey, Jonathan, I see you raising your hand.
Hey, yeah, I know last time we talked, EFS was your shared file-oriented recommendation. There are a lot of other kind of cluster file systems, cluster file systems out there. Have you included a positive recommendation for whether it's Ceph or ONTAP or any of the other that are out there, or are you still kind
You're
of
not wrong, and there are other considerations, and the list could go on. I think we've just gravitated towards the two most straightforward. Like, was it FSx is probably the most high performant option, which offers Ceph under the hood. We haven't had any customer ever have a use case for that level of high performance file system. So we've never explored it.
Fair enough.
I think there's a fair point to be made, John, if you're doing anything beyond just pretty obvious file operations and you're doing this for high performance compute or other specialized use cases, you're running a mail server on your Kubernetes cluster and you need to have, a kajillion files on it. I think there are other interesting options. And darn it, there's one that I just learned about that I want to put on here. I was surprised. I didn't realize there is a CSI driver for S3, so you can use it as a native file system in
That's what I
Kubernetes.
was going to say is, yeah, and you can use multi-attach EBS nodes, or you could use ESI for, driver for S3. And you can cache that if you use the storage gateway to make it faster in cluster.
Interesting. So the storage gateway is, we talked about that last week for a different purpose. I think you were the one who brought it up as a possible consideration for I forget who had the problem, but with a storage gateway, there's a use case to deploy that within your VPC on AWS for caching.
Yep, you could put it in your VPC. I have it on my stack here. I think you can containerize it and run it in cluster. I'd
Interesting.
have to look into that. There's two different storage gateways, one for S3 and one for EBS, but you could.
Interesting. All right.
I don't know the answer, but that's a good question.
I think I'll add some honorable mentions. We'll update this and add some honorable mentions for that. All right. Any other questions before we move on? All right. Next one is this just stood out to me. One of the developers on our team, who's a regular here in office hours, hope you get well, Matt, has started using Cursor a lot, and I've heard good great things from him and others that it is a pretty powerful AI system, AI code editor. And what separates it from like Copilot is that it's actually aware of your code base that you're in, and it's just so annoying with GitHub Copilot that it's just totally unaware of the rest of your code base when it's making suggestions or doing things. So I was curious about that. If you're interested or curious as well, this is a write-up. It was trending this week on Hacker News on their experience using Cursor. Cursor is, as if you don't know, is a fork of VS Code. So it works with VS Code plugins, but it's designed to work, is it with Claude out of the box for better suggestions? Is it? Am I messing that up, Claude?
Claude Sonnet.
Anyone here using it?
Yes.
How are you liking it, brother?
I love it. It's amazing. In fact, the fact that Claude 3.5 Sonnet is so good on that has led us to build some internal tools that use it
Interesting.
to, for example, answer infosec questions. It is. But Cursor itself is, I almost couldn't imagine programming without it now.
Interesting.
It is really, really good, especially now that they have a thing called Composer, which basically allows it to do multiple files. So you can give it a set of rules. I have maybe 30 rules for how I like my Python projects to be organized and what testing modules I want to use, and it will build me a make file and a project configuration files, gitignore. It'll structure the project for me, and yeah, maybe I have to tweak it a little bit, but things that would
That's
take
cool.
a long time to type out, it will just push into being with the very low effort.
That's really interesting. And I since I'm not educated on this particular tool, can you train it in some way on or create custom models for it to improve it?
I don't know about creating custom models, but you, Claude has such a large context window, something like 200,000 tokens, that you don't really need to train a custom model. You
You
just
can
need to
just
say, hey, look at all this code and do it like this code does it. So there's a whole thing about training a model, which is something that I leave to the Anthropics and OpenAIs of the world, but just giving it a lot of content to match or to model its response on, that works fine. And I'm still only paying 12 cents a day or whatever it is. It's incredibly cheap to just feed it oodles of context, as opposed to trying to create a custom model.
At the risk of oversolutioning a problem that's complicated already, if you run your own inferencing server like Ollama, you can build a RAG in that points to your code base wherever you keep that as well. So you could have it, everything passes through the RAG, and then that attunes it to whatever code you've pointed it to. I mean,
And
you could
that
do that
works.
with Bedrock and a bunch of other things too, but I'm just seeing
But
to
it
keep it.
also works with Cursor.
I don't know the answer to that
No,
question.
I don't think so.
Got
But
it.
the problem with RAG is that you're always selecting K blocks to send for inference, whereas the new models from Google or OpenAI or Anthropic, whoever, they're able to take so many input tokens that you don't have to really select. You can just feed it 100,000 tokens, like your entire code base, and just say, here, use this. RAG is a great optimization, but it's an optimization for small token appetite. If you're dealing with the modern LLMs, their token, their ability to ingest tokens is so large compared to most input streams, just give it everything. It's an amazing time in this technology because we've had to do so many tight tunings, and RAG is a RAG style optimization, and cert. You don't have to do that now. You can just feed it everything.
Really interesting. So, because where I'm going, obviously, with this is I'm always curious how we can leverage this to improve the, well, to get the level of tab completion that I get, building a Next.js app and getting that within Atmos and Atmos stack configurations and all these things, but having it also be aware of some of our best practices, our reference architecture, our documentation, so it can really give you the best answer.
If you build a dot cursor rules file, Cursor is will read that, and I have now a link, a sim link to my standard dot cursor rules in all of my projects, and I just say, based on dot cursor rules, please do X. Read this, and then it's got all of that instructions in it. For Python, I have about 40 lines of instruction. For InfoSec answers, I have I feed it a large knowledge base and 40, 50, 60 instructions, and it does a great job.
Is your knowledge base for compliance in Markdown or something, or do you have
Yes, so
other?
basically, I just transfer like our SOC 2 system description and our InfoSec policies. I just put that into Markdown and say, here,
Nice.
take this. And like that would not have worked back when the context windows were, 20,000 characters or what have you. But the Google Gemini has got what, 1 million, 2 million token input
Ooh, wow.
opportunity. Claude is 200,000. I've fed it, my entire InfoSec compliance regime as just part of the input. Like here, take it all. Take all my previous answers.
So, Jonathan, remind me, did you end up going with Vanta or Drata or some other service? You don't have to
We use
answer.
Vanta.
Use Vanta. Okay, got it.
Vanta, in theory, has its own AI system, but
Right.
It turns out that our internally built Claude-driven AI is dramatically more performant and answers the questions much better. So
Huh.
I'm sure that they have tried to
Interesting.
optimize their cost, whereas
Oh,
I
you
am
don't
not
think they're
optimizing
doing
my
that.
cost, because even if I spit everything at the model, I've never paid more than $4 to even on my largest questionnaire. Hundreds of questions, our entire InfoSec compliance documentation. Typically, it costs me a dime,
Oh man.
and I'll pay
Yeah.
13 cents all day long for
Oh yeah. Oh, those things are
for.
the reason why I ask is we recently signed up for Drawdot. We haven't yet it's not fully configured yet, and we haven't, we're starting just kicking off this process at Cloud Posse. But one of the selling points was that AI component to answer the questionnaires. But I'm hoping Drawdot is gonna be a better experience than what you
I
described.
would love to hear if you tell me that it's
Yeah.
better. I mean, they knock on my door all the time.
Yeah.
We are using an internally built tool because basically Claude is so good, Sonnet is so good that we don't need to depend on a vendor for that.
Cool. I'll be checking that out. All right. Any quick more questions or comments on that before we move on? Okay. Just surfacing some updates on Atmos, since not everyone is glued to the pull request like I am these days. So one of the interesting things with Atmos is that we support vendoring. Vendoring is this idea where you can pull in your third-party dependencies. One of the oversights was that we didn't support vendoring without having these things we call stack configurations, which are the configuration of your infrastructure. So we fixed that. So now you can vendor everything, including your stack configurations, from scratch. So it's a great way to initialize a repository from like blessed configurations that are centralized. Atmos Validate. This is how you do OPA validation and JSON validation in Atmos. Previously, the JSON schema had to be remote, had to be local. Now we made it so you can just point to the one that we host publicly at atmos.tools, and that is now the default. So Atmos Validate should work, and even if you don't have local configuration of the schemas. And lastly, Atmos version awkwardly wouldn't work if your configuration had problems. And what if the reason your configuration has problems is because the Atmos version? So it's this chicken and the egg problem. So we fixed it now. So Atmos version always works, regardless if your configuration is borked for that version of Atmos. So that was a minor thing. All right. Next announcement is back on to AWS, and this is interesting. So one of the things Amplify is trying to do is bring like some of the Vercel Heroku-like qualities to AWS. And now, this is AWS, so it's never going to be that easy. But this is an interesting thing or an interesting development that now they have stat integration with S3 with CDN out of the box. Now, Matt, I saw you on the call a second ago. Are you still here, Matt Gowey?
Yeah, how's it going?
Weren't you having issues with Amplify for SPAs and S3 or CDN access or something? I thought you had some GitHub issue open. You asked everyone to go
Yeah,
upvote. What was that
you know,
about?
I really
Getting a little
wanted,
confused.
I think I wanted Amplify to be better. And I think in my own personal experience, I had a good experience. And then we've rolled it out for a client and we've had some bad experience, where it's just like not as it's AWS and they're going out of their lane and they build services and there's
Yeah.
problems. So yeah, I think one of the main things that we ran into was that there was a big caching issue. So it's like it was behind a CDN, but the CDN basically wasn't doing anything. It was
All right.
setting a cache header that just did not. It was like 1 second or something like that, where it was not actually being cached. So we rolled this out for a customer where, hey, we previously were loading things from a container, and it was like fine, and it actually slowed down when we moved on to Amplify, I think. Or it was something where we expected like a 10x speed increase, but it was like not really that great. They did fix that.
Oh, they
We
did
haven't,
fix
I
it.
don't think we've tested it out yet, but they did something where it's now they now have better control over the CDN that fronts your assets. So I think that they did get around to it, but it was like something that took them multiple years of other people complaining, and we just came in at the end and got really loud, and it seemed like that pushed them forward. But yeah, Amplify generally, particularly the back end stuff. So I think there's a big again, classic AWS, they're shitty at naming. There's Amplify hosting, which is the Vercel S3, static website side of things. And then there's Amplify, just called Amplify, which is their back end stuff, and they're commingled, but like I think that I would never touch any of the Amplify backend nonsense because it sounds like it's just a total rat's nest. The static website stuff is not, it's hard to get at what you really want for all the configuration that's going into it. Like they're trying to create a pass and using all the AWS primitives to create that pass, but they don't give you access to any of those underlying primitives. So that's what can get problematic. And I think it gets difficult when you really want to be able to do manual deployments and have multiple branches, and we've just run into some ugliness that we're still working through, honestly. So yeah.
Anyone else have opinions on Amplify? Curious to hear.
I've done it more than once. I've Just make sure you know what you're biting off, basically. So just echoing everything he just said, it comes with a lot. It ties your hands in a lot of places, and just make sure that you understand where all those places are before you commit to it.
Yeah. All right. Next announcement. Carrying up my tabs here. Yeah. I thought this was interesting. I only saw the headline a little bit before office hours, so I haven't gotten to explore it. If I understand correctly, this sounds like you can do more or less role chaining in a single request without having to make nested requests, which sounds like a nice thing because role chaining obviously complicates the whole process. Now I don't believe they use those terms like chaining in here, so that's why I was kind of like, well, maybe I'm reading what I want this to be. Anyone know more about this?
I'm not a big AWS identity fan, so I've never really used any of their trusted identity products like this.
Yeah. So yeah, let's we'll bring this up again next week. I'll have our resident IAM expert give me the down low on what this is. And next announcement is, I've seen some modules like this over the years. It's been a while since we brought anything up on office hours, so I thought I'd share this one. All in all, I like this, the conceptually. How do you get notified when things are done outside of Terraform? This is a implementation of presumably a Lambda deployed that will generate an SNS notification. But more than that, I don't know. Was I mentioning the word Lambda? Yeah, so it is Lambda. And last thing, we've talked about CodaRabbit on office hours. I was curious about CodaRabbit. Curious for input. If anyone else has tried it, we're using it now more and more on our open source repositories. And as I've worked to increase the velocity of some bug fixes and things on our Atmos project, It's introducing newer developers with less familiarity with the code base, and I want to reduce the strain on our team to do those reviews. And I've been just totally happy, totally ecstatic with the suggestions that it comes up with in doing these reviews. So we've done this now for a couple of weeks on our Atmos projects, and you can go through and see what the reviews were on these and if they were actionable or not. Let's see if there's a interesting one here. So yeah, I thought this was a great catch actually that it found that we ended up resolving as a result of that. I think if I had just done a cursory review of these, I would have missed it. Also, there's trending on Hacker News right now is a post on how GitHub has struck up deals with Anthropic and Google to use their AI as well. That's a separate conversation of itself. Kind of what is the business? What's the backstory there? But one of the trending comments was also just about, a distrust of AI in general and writing the code. And I can understand it. There's a risk there, but I think it's mitigated by something like this. This shows how, let's say this developer wrote the code using AI and that code introduced something it shouldn't be doing. Well, this other AI found that problem and made good suggestions on how to correct it. So that is kind of like, this agent model, one working against the other in different contexts with different parameters. And it's working out well, AI against AI.
Are you folks on the free tier? Are you folks on
We
the...
are free because we do have the benefit as an open source organization that 99.9999% of everything we have is open source. So yeah, we are doing that. Presumably, if we weren't open source, we'd be making more money and then I could pay for it. But yeah, that is the case.
Yeah, I haven't hooked up any AI tools to private repositories yet. I've been wanting to, because some of these summarization or peer review tools look pretty awesome, but concerned about
Oh,
the
so
data.
you're not using like Copilot even personally?
Not at this time, no. I'm explicitly open up PoE or ChatGPT and use like generic placeholders if I need help on code or just
Interesting.
prompt engineer from scratch, but I haven't been sending up any
Okay.
any code, at least nothing with specifics in it.
Yeah.
We're using this for some of our open source repositories, and it's funny, Veronica on my team right now is putting through a big PR for a new child module that we're releasing, and CodeRabbit is good. There's good suggestions in there. But it just is slamming the PR with so many comments that it's like, I want to be able to like give it instructions at a high level as well. Like you can do learnings, which are nice,
Yeah.
and we're liking that. I do like that. But the we were I was just looking at the configuration today about, hey, how deep or how many suggestions can it make? Can we limit it to, hey, five instead of going for the 20 that it comes up
Yeah.
with?
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like that's possible today. So I reached out to their support.
Yeah, let me
It
know
makes
about
PRs
that.
hard to navigate. I'll say that.
Yeah, I would like so I it's interesting. I had this debate with actually Matt on my team about that as well, is that I love the suggestions, but there's something to me about the visual aspect of it that is just too much TMI on the screen. It doesn't direct my attention. And it's weird that something that is overly grammatically correct and thorough would actually be annoying, but it is. So I would like to turn off some of these I realized you can't. Like, I don't care about this comment. I want to turn that off. It always trips me up.
I'm sure they're getting a lot of feedback about all this stuff constantly, and I'm sure it's just going to be this big configuration soup that they create. I think that'll be good. Generally, I want the like high level prompts that we can like feed into it that say, hey, we want you to limit to your top five suggestions. We want you as the big thing is that as each new commit gets pushed, it's going in and doing a full review of everything again.
I know.
And it's like finding new shit. Yeah. I'm sure that their servers are slammed. Particularly because, open source projects like Cloud Posse. I mean, if you turn this on for all Terraform AWS, oh my God. I would imagine they will call you. But yeah. It's cool. Yeah. It's definitely, I'm glad you brought it up in the contributors chat, because I am excited that something like this exists. I think this is what we need.
And by the way, I was surprised you joined. Aren't you supposed to be like overseas or something? Or when's your trip?
I just got back from Nepal on Sunday night.
Oh, okay. You know what LinkedIn does is sometimes it drips out those announcements. So I just saw that this week, and I guess that was an old.
No, it's funny. Post. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, I hope that was a great trip.
It was great. Yeah, man. I'll tell you about it another time.
Yeah. Let's see. Is that the end of my announcements? I think it might have been. That was code around. Yeah. Okay, cool. Any other announcements that I missed over the past week or so? Things that caught your eye we should talk about? All right, Q&A. Any questions piled up for this week?
I have one that I've shared with another community that I never got great feedback on. There's a bunch of products that are in the like, hey, you have all this data across different SaaS products, right? You've got Google Drive, you've got Notion, you've got Slack, you've got GitHub, and you want to search against it. You want to ask questions of that data. You want to be able to have kind of a knowledge base that ties it all together. Has anybody solved that problem? Is anybody using a tool that they like? And I'll preface it with, I'm not interested in the Glean answer because that's like a $50,000 out of the gate SaaS tool. And there's a bunch of those. I have not looked at this one. AI? I think one of the things I'm very sorry, I don't think I even said the word AI, but I'm like, I basically want to connect all those data sources and then chat with it. Have it be something that in Slack or in some UI, I can say to it, hey, give me what's our policy at MasterPoint for, Terraform, naming. And it'll go and look at GitHub comments and it'll look at what we've said in Slack and what we have in Notion and combine those things into these are the various things. So Dancer is what I was looking at. And I think I'm going to try this out at some point. I'm glad you brought it up because at least it's on your mind too. And maybe I found out about it from
We talked Sweet about Ops. It on Office Hours. Yeah. I didn't realize.
Is anybody running Dancer? Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's new.
I'm not using Dancer, but recently I was at an AWS Orange County event and they were promoting Bedrock and they also promoted Q, and it looks like Q is like the very managed version of Bedrock, and Bedrock has a lot of those integrations that you may have mentioned just earlier. And Q is like the managed offering, just connected up and everything just automatically works. But I have not tried it out myself. It seemed to have a ton of connectors, including Google Drive and Confluence, I think, and Jira. And I'm not sure what the next one is, but I see
that's the one I did look into, where I actually spun that up in our AWS account and started to go down that path. They don't have a good Slack connector. So they have a third party that does the Slack connector. And I think that Slack is actually the thing that I'm looking for the most out of this, right? I want all the like rich
conversations of me and my team going back and forth on a client issue to be something that somebody types three words and they find that and they're able to actually surface the most important information from it. But yeah, Slack was not, and Amazon Q overall just seemed, it's AWS building.
Q's not it.
Yeah, I don't think it's it. I don't know who said that, but yeah.
It's a good, like, hey, look, we have a Clippy tool, but like Q isn't it.
But yeah, Dancer, I mean, I you know, if you're not, yeah, oh, there is one other one. They reached out to me and gave me a demo. It was pretty cool. Also startup grade, but it wasn't open source. I don't know. The fact that this is something you can self-host and set up and get going is compelling to me. I just wish we had the cycles to do something like that.
Yeah. I'm thinking of doing it. Hopefully, like, over the holiday or something, I'll be able to put some time into it. We'll see.
Yeah.
So just to clarify, Dancer could be self-hosted for free. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes. And then they have an enterprise offering. That's where they make money.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. Surprised they have an R2 connector. I wonder who's using that. That's awesome.
What I thought was going to be interesting, I was looking if they had a SQL connector, because then you connect SQL to SteamPipe, and now you got like a connector for every single thing out there. Ooh. But I don't see that yet. One interesting, I had spoken to a company, they were doing something interesting. They built RPC support for Terraform providers so they could use Terraform data, but only so they could use Terraform data sources. And there's like a Terraform provider for everything out there these days. So by proxy of that, they could ingest data from anything that has a Terraform provider and a data source. So I thought that was a pretty cool approach. SteamPipe, though, being another one. I mean, I'm always blown away by just how many integrations SteamPipe has.
Building Terraform support for data sources is pretty damn smart.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Who is that?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
The name. Yeah. But the technique was interesting, I thought. I mean, it's similar to, you know, what Pulumi did to build a language very quickly that supported everything Terraform did. Well, just RPC the calls to the Terraform provider.
But when you're in the infrastructure as code space, that makes sense. You know, everybody's doing that. Upbound is doing that. I think that's why CDKTF is like even became a project. But if you're a completely separate industry and you're like, ooh, this Terraform thing has all this access to data and all the code's written and it's being updated continuously, that's a good idea. Let's make a weird pipe over here. I love that. Whoever came up with that must have.
But you could imagine a system like Drata or Vanta building something like that. So then now they can monitor all those.
All systems. The things. Yeah, that's smart. I like
and
it.
Hey, you provisioned it with Terraform. We now monitor it. So. Yeah. All right. Matt, so going back to this is also, you know, we were talking about Coder Rabbit and, you know, all the good and some of the bad. And, you know, there was talk about enabling it. And you're one of our, MVP reviewers, obviously. Thank you for all that. Now, if we had enabled Coder Rabbit on more repos, do you think that will increase reviewer load or decrease reviewer load? And somehow, I think in the current state, it would increase it. Or would it? I don't know. It would definitely produce better, probably, contributions, but more iterations.
What we need is the like top level learnings that are not repo specific. We need like, okay, for the Cloud Posse organization, these are like the 10 things that always come up in a review, right? It's like, yo, you need to run make readme and commit and push, like, or hey, we use the underscore enabled
best practice. Like, be sure to include that. If once we get there with CodeRabbit, and that's one question that I still have, that I think that all of the learnings are repo specific, which makes sense in a I don't think that makes sense for Cloud Posse and the way things are set up in a very poly repo. It doesn't make sense for Terraform. But once you can do poly repo learnings, that feels like it would be huge, and it would actually be a really good advantage.
That would be really cool. Also, if you could feed it kind of a style guide,
exactly
your best. So here's like our best practices that we have at Cloud Posse for our modules and how we approach things. If we could train it also on our practices, that'd be cool.
We're this document just came up yesterday. I just sent it to one of my newer team members and was like, "Hey, read this entire thing because we're creating our own best practices, and we need to read Anton's, we need to read Cloud Posse's, and then we need to incorporate all of it into our existing best practices." So yeah. Anyway.
All right. Cool. Well, we need to catch up sometime soon.
We do. You going to KubeCon?
Unfortunately, I'm not. Okay. You know, kind of sitting out the conference circuit.
That's good.
I would like to go to reInvent as well. Are you going again this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm already jealous of, you know, I think I'm going to these, both of them, and I'm like, do I wish that I was going to both of them? We'll see. They're a lot. It's
and
a
pretty
lot.
Close time-wise.
Very close. Yeah. It's less than a month. It's like 3 weeks away. I'm actually, I leave for Utah, and I'm going to like basically stay in Utah for a month and then go immediately to reInvent. It feels like a lot. So yeah, but I'm doing it to myself, so I can't really complain.
Yeah. Hey, any other questions from anyone? Other observations? Announcements, news, questions, troubles, gripes, rants. All right, well, maybe we wrap things up a little bit early this office hours. Thank you all for attending. We'll be posting a recording of the session to our YouTube channel. If you haven't yet subscribed, go to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse, and you'll find today's session and all of our past sessions there. If you're curious about working with Cloud Posse and seeing what we can do for you at your business, we are the proverbial Terraform experts. Go to cloudposse.com/meet, book a session with me directly, just answer a few quick questions. And here's some other things you can, some other actions you can take if you want to get more involved with our community. We have our Slack community at slack.cloudposse.com. I think we just broke 10,000 signups finally. So that's been 10 years in the making. We have our newsletter, newsletter.cloudposse.com, kind of on hiatus at the moment, but we'll be bringing that back shortly. And our podcast, which is a syndication of our weekly office hours. So there are some things to sign up for before you join us next week. Same time, same place. So thank you, everyone. Have a great rest of your week. Take care.